This B Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. Loved and trusted by more than 1 million teachers, IXL enhances your teaching and takes work off your plate so you can make an even bigger impact on your students. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K-12 curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable, real-time insights. Strengthen daily instruction, close knowledge gaps quickly, and set every student up for success. Want to bring IXL to your school? Learn more at IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE. Welcome to the Cyber Traps Podcast. I am Jethro Jones, coming to you from Washington, host of the podcast Transformative Principal and author of the book School X, How to Redesign Your School for the People Right in Front of You. I am a former principal at all levels of K-12 education.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Frederick Lane, an author, attorney, and educational consultant, temporarily based in East Hampton, New York. I'm the author of 10 books, including most recently, Cyber Traps for Educators 2.0, Raising Cyber-Ethical Kids, and Cyber Traps for Expecting Moms and Dads. Jethro and I have teamed up to bring timely, entertaining, and useful information to teachers, parents, and others about the risks arising from the use and misuse of digital devices.
Over the coming weeks and months, we'll be talking to some of the world's leading experts from the fields of education, parenting, sociology, and cyber safety. Join us as we look at what it takes to better navigate our increasingly high-tech world. For more information or to donate to our work, please visit centerforcyberethics.org.
The Center for Cyber Ethics is the producer of the Cyber Traps podcast, although it's really just the two of us eating chat. In any case, the Center for Cyber Ethics is an independent, nonpartisan educational institute dedicated to the study and promotion of cyber ethics as a positive social force through research, curricular development, publishing and media, professional training, and public advocacy.
Well, this episode and the next few episodes of the podcast are going to be about our time at the PPI conference in Boise, Idaho. So as we are chatting here, I hope you enjoy it and enjoy the people that we were able to talk with. This was the Professional Practices Institute put on by the National Association of State Directors of Teacher and Educator Certification. And this is a similar conference that Fred and I went to last year in Oklahoma City as well. So hope you enjoy this and the following episodes that are going to be like it. Since we were recording in a public place, there are some times where the background noise gets a little much, but hopefully we've done enough to take care of that and it's not too annoying. And thanks for your patience with that. Well, why don't you start by telling us your name and what you do?
Okay, my name is Felicia Villalobos. I'm the executive director for the Hawaii Teacher Standards Board.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, glad to have you here. So tell us what that work entails, because I'm learning that's a little bit different in each state.
Yeah, so we are separate from the Department of Education. We have an independent licensing board. And so as executive director, I basically implement the policies and rules and laws that the board has created. And we license all of the public school educators in the state of Hawaii, which actually includes charter schools. Our charter schools are public schools. So we have charter and our public. Our private schools are not licensed. However, we are working with our administrative rules right now to have them, they can have an option to be certificated. So they can come through the licensing board to receive a private school certificate. Again, not mandatory because the law doesn't require them to have a license or permit, but there is that option coming up.
Interesting. If I recall correctly, having been out there a couple of times, you're one big school district, right?
Yeah, we're unique in that. We are just one large school district with all, even though the islands are all separate, we're all one. So we have one superintendent, one large board of education, and yes, we are just one big district.
Yeah. Are there challenges with that from your perspective?
There's pros and cons. Again, there are people that want to have the Board of Ed and have districts because of allocation of money and funds. Mm-hmm. But then again, there's that whole aspect of when you are one district, then you kind of are pretty much trying to be on the same page moving forward, and nothing is missed. So you don't have one island doing better than another island or that kind of thing. So everyone's trying to work together.
Mm-hmm. You'd also get economies of scale from negotiation and yep. you know, bargaining and so forth,
yeah.
and purchasing and all that good stuff.
And then, yeah, because we don't do the property tax thing like most districts do. That property tax goes to that school in that area. That doesn't happen in Hawaii. So the general funded, so they have a huge $1 billion budget. But then that's a con, right, to try to make sure everyone has a fair share, equal share of the pot. Mm-hmm. And making sure that the information is going down to the schools, because there are so many schools and the islands are really separate. So how is that information getting out and ensuring that's happening?
Yeah, I remember doing one set of lectures out there that RJ, remember RJ was one of our early guests, so he organized, he's just, you know, right on it, and he's like, okay, I'm going to pick you up at 5 a.m. because we got to fly to Maui, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to catch the one flight that goes. it's an experience.
And the indigenous population, too, the Hawaiian culture and aspect of that, that's, again, we're a two-language state, so it's English and Hawaiian. So we have immersion schools in the state of Hawaii. And so in our constitution, teachers should be able to teach and perpetuate the culture of Hawaii. And that's something we're looking at as well. We have a Hawaiian work group working right now to kind of decide on licensing, just because of the practitioner part of that. And so we're trying to get everyone together, and you need all the stakeholders from all the different Hawaiian agencies and things in Hawaii to come together to compromise on certain issues. And so that's another aspect. And you may see that across other states that have indigenous cultures, but Hawaii is really strong and they have a great voice. Mm-hmm. And they want to ensure, because again, it was almost a dead language at some point, so they want to make sure that the schools are incorporating, the public schools are incorporating that, as well as the immersion schools have the resources and funds, but a lot of it's charter schools, so then you're balancing that money too.
Right, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, contrasting Hawaii, for instance, with Alaska, which is another one of the places, I mean, a lot of the same issues. I would argue, and maybe I get some pushback from the Alaskans, that they're a little less strong in terms of the indigenous culture than you guys are, but also Alaska's enormous. Mm-hmm. So there's challenges, and it's also, I would guess, a little bit more varied. I don't know. An interesting thing to explore.
And right now we do have a Hawaiian permit. I'm not sure, Fred, if you're aware of the Hawaiian permit. You just need a high school diploma. And what they are doing is, these are individuals who are fluent in Hawaiian. And so they're trying to help them navigate to become teachers, because that's where you're going to get them.
Really smart, right?
Yeah, our kids who've gone through an immersion program, hey, do you want to become a teacher? You're already fluent. Let's help you through that process. Mm-hmm. So they came to the board a while back, and they asked for a Hawaiian permit with these conditions that they had to be monitored yearly. They have to have some kind of plan in place, and they're going to help them through the whole getting a degree, basically, and becoming a licensed teacher so they can actually help the immersion schools.
Really smart.
Yeah.
And it's something that is essential to perpetuate the language and the culture. Otherwise, that's why it likely died, that you didn't have teachers who were continuing to teach it and making it a priority in each school. So is it something that is a priority in each school, or is it the immersion schools where it's really the priority?
It's a priority for the immersion schools primarily, just to ensure they have quality instructors.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, because they don't have all these spaces filled, they do have to hire teachers who don't speak the language. And sometimes it's even teachers from the mainland that they have.
I was going to ask about it, yeah.
And so they try to, because they have content, maybe they have the content, but they don't have the language, and so they're trying to work with them to help them with the language. But you're learning an entire language.
Yeah.
So that maybe, I mean, I don't know if they're
and a non-Romanized too. Yeah. So it's a little bit even more challenging, I think. I have a kind of very tenuous grasp with Spanish and French, but when I've traveled to Hawaii, it's a very different language structure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier to learn how to be a teacher than it is to learn a whole nother language.
So, and that's what we're trying to argue, and that we need those already people who speak it or grew up around it to, it's easier to have them go through college and all that stuff to become a teacher than to teach them in a whole language. Not only the language, because a lot of the culture, beliefs, and everything, like most languages, is embedded in it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's really cool. Well, I guess I have to bring us up to the Cybertraps piece of this. So you took over for Lynn Hammond.
I did.
Yeah, who we're still trying to drag onto the show at some point. Hopefully we'll get to do that. But, certainly I worked a lot with Lynn on the technology issues that all teachers, including Hawaiian teachers, are facing. So in the, 18 months, 2 years? How long has it been now that since you took over?
I think 2 years. Yeah. I was intern for a year, and then I'm starting my new stint around, so a little over a year. Was it May?
It sounds about right. So it hasn't been terribly long, but I'd still love to get your comments on what kinds of technology-related issues you're seeing in the islands and how you're dealing with them.
Yeah, COVID really brought that to light.
I'm sure it did.
We've got some interesting cases where teachers were on a break, however, didn't turn off their computer and were smoking some things and tried to use, hey, it was on a break. But the camera was on, kids were watching, they got reported. People taking their computer to the bathroom on the way to the library to do something and camera's on. So those kind of things, because maybe everyone had to become an online teacher with no online training, that these kind of things probably would have been prevented if they had a course in it. But again, COVID didn't allow for that. You just jump on a computer and we'll give you maybe some training. And again, I was already leaving the profession. I was hired as a licensing specialist. So I did my last semester when COVID hit as an elementary first grade teacher teaching inclusion, which was really interesting. Talk about having children not prepared. And trying to have an inclusion setting, so both our special ed students, whose parents maybe had to work and they weren't sitting right there by the computer, it was just like, no, I can't see you, where are you? You have your camera off, you gotta turn your camera off. It was just a lot of chaos, and I'm sure they kind of figured it out the following school year. But
I think one of the things I was really struck by, because of course, you see how your research changes when a world event shows up. Yeah. But the idea that now all of a sudden we talk so much about boundaries, right? And the distinction between professional and personal, and boom, you're teaching from your home. And that, so many teachers I know ran into mostly mild situations where they forgot what was on their bookshelves, or maybe their poster was somehow inappropriate, or things like that.
Yeah, and we really need to reach out to our teachers and maybe even the department to see what's happening with the online stuff, and because I'm sure they have a lot of cases right now that deal with online, and we usually get them later down the line, so hopefully 6 months, so that their investigations are pretty long. I'm sure we're going to start seeing that COVID era coming to our licensing agency as soon as those investigations are complete, and I'm sure a lot of it's going to have to do with online.
But it's actually useful, because you obviously we're talking about the growth of virtual reality and metaverse and so forth, and there's a lot of overlap, at least in broad terms, between those technologies and this idea of a virtual classroom, that encompasses 25 homes and the teacher's home. So there will be useful lessons to be drawn from this.
Exactly, and one of the things is the department actually went the way, because it did work for some students and some teachers. When it did work, then now they're looking at a whole unit or a section of the department that's dedicated to online learning.
Nice.
So they're trying to have that become more of the forefront. If it did work for them, then hey, they have that option now. It's not just brick and mortar schools.
Well, and that's one thing I've been saying since the fall of 2020, that whenever we go back to what life looks like again, if you don't have an online component, you're going to lose kids. Mm-hmm. Period, end of story. If your district doesn't provide something like that, then families are going to choose someplace else. Mm-hmm. And that's just the reality, because for some families, it was way better to do Zoom school than it was to send their kids physically to school every day. For other families, it was way worse. And for some, it was just plain impossible. My oldest daughter with Down syndrome, for example, there's no way Zoom school would have worked. It just, there's no way it would not have worked for her. And so thankfully she got to go to school every day, or I think 3 days a week during the pandemic, and then later got to go every day. And it was really good for her to go to school, and because otherwise there would have been no learning. She would have had no success, and she would have been bored and driven us crazy as well.
Well, a flip side of that is my sister Kate is 15 years younger than I am, has three kids, three daughters under the age of 13, and lives in a third floor apartment in Somerville, Mass. So she's working for WGBH, and her kids, all three of them, are doing class in the same space. It was a nightmare. And now, of course, the kids are complaining, and this is pretty much throughout New England, is that there are no more snow days, right? Because now...
Those days are gone, right? They can, oh, we're working remotely.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, it looks like a blizzard. We'll be doing this unit, right?
Yep.
And I used to love snow days. They were, truly a great gift from God. So.
Did you ever actually have a snow day? Because I sure didn't.
I had many, many, many snow days. As a matter of fact, the legendary one, this is utterly off topic, but the legendary one was the Blizzard of 82, which is when, right around my birthday, so I have a week off anyway, blizzard descends on Massachusetts, 35 inches of snow in my town and across eastern Massachusetts. I was out of school for 2.5 weeks. It was heaven. And I'm talking to, Hawaiian and Utah.
Yeah.
And they're like,
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, it was funny. It was a good time.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that's coming up, and I should have had our board chair, who's actually an active counselor at one of our high schools, is the mental health issue component you got to reintegrate with your peers. And how that's working, because whenever time I talk to them, it's and not only the students, but also the teachers, the mental health component of now you're in person, now you got to maybe deal with personality face to face. How is that working?
Well, the socialization piece, right, was a huge deficit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know one researcher from UH-Manoa, she is looking at student teaching. And when you did your student teaching all online for COVID, and now we gave you a license, and now school's in person, how are you handling behavior management one-on-one in a group, or how are you
handling
that?
It's almost like you're licensing for two different things.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of the new teachers, and we'll get more research from her later, may be struggling.
Yeah, I bet.
Struggling, and is that going to lead to retention? Because now I can't handle the classroom. It's just, I haven't been trained for in-person learning or in-person teaching. I don't know what to do. I haven't seen a mentor teacher do it. We all have done it virtually, so now what am I gonna do?
Yeah, and that's a very real issue, but at the same time, you couldn't not let those people continue, right? You couldn't hold them back because one, we didn't know the future, so we couldn't say, everything will be fine in 2 years, or
we
not.
Still can't say that.
That's right. Day by day at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, very much so.
So you couldn't hold them back, and you actually needed them to go out into the field so that we could fill the spots of people who decided to retire because of the pandemic as well.
Just seeing that, and so now you're dealing with new teachers in the classroom, and then kids who have been out of school for quite a while. So what's going on? I think mental health has to be a priority at this point to figure out how to get back, and not even back to normal, but find a new normal, right?
Right, exactly right. And I think that from, a technological point of view, one of my concerns is that social media and online activities don't help mental health to begin with. So now you've got layers of, for lack of a better term, trauma that we're all grappling with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very real. What things are you putting in place, or do you think should be put in place to help with that?
To help with that, and just speaking with our board chair and going to these sessions here at the PPI and talking about mental health issues along with other issues that other states are dealing with, is bringing this information back to the board and kind of coming up together with different stakeholders to see what can we do. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be probably starting because the board has a regulatory authority over the educator preparation providers.
Mm.
What can we do? What are you seeing in your colleges? What can we do as a board to help you folks with either teachers with retention? Do they need more mentoring? Mm-hmm. Are there mentors out there to be found? Because we also found that they're having a hard time placing teachers with cooperating teachers because there's the cooperating teachers are so overwhelmed.
Oh, sure.
That they don't want to take on one extra thing and being a mentor to a teacher yeah. candidate. So now they're asking, so where can I find this? So now we've got to think outside the box. Okay, we have National Board Certified teachers. What if we tap into those? And ask them, hey, you're nationally board certified. Would you like to be on a list that an EPP can use and you can have a student teacher? And so that's where we're trying to gather right now. We do have a national board collective. And so one of our licensing specialists is working with that collective to generate a list. And their job is that collective's gonna reach out to other teachers who are national board certified and say, hey, our EPPs need us, our in-state teachers need us. Would you like to be a mentor mm-hmm. teacher? And so that's what we're working on for that. But for the mental health issue, we're gonna have to go back to our EPPs and say, are you guys doing anything with curriculum? Do you guys need seminars? Can we provide someone? And again, working with our district as well, having that relationship and seeing, is this a critical issue? Working with our union, maybe you guys can, because they do a lot of PD courses in our state. Yeah. That's how teachers move, is when they get enough courses, they can move on the pay scale. So our union is really active in having a lot of PD courses that are relevant to teachers' needs, and that allows them to move on the pay scale.
Yeah, that's a nice incentive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good.
And even with that NEA,
right,
helping with that, because again, they're under that umbrella of NEA. So what can we do? So it's just gonna be a lot of outreaching to see who needs it. And that's what the board usually does, is we like to bring people together, all stakeholders, and try to figure out a solution together, pulling our resources.
Yeah, well, that's what it sounds like, is that you're really trying to get everybody on the same page. Mm-hmm. And do you have the manpower with the board to do trainings for teachers?
We don't. Our office is pretty small right now. I am asking for more positions.
Yeah.
So we don't, but so then that's when we pull, like, can we help? Can you guys help us with this? You guys have manpower to do this, and we can support in whatever way the board can support. But mm-hmm. right now, we're an office of 8, and we just filled in our last 2 positions, an office assistant and a licensing specialist. So now we have 8. We have around 22,000 active licenses, 13,500 in the state of Hawaii that are using a license right now. So we don't have the manpower just yet, but I would like to build capacity. And again, the licensing agency can be that agency to gather that information and to help, or at least connect people.
Yeah, it's interesting yeah. because Hawaii, it strikes me that you are more active in terms of the teacher training and educated prep than a lot of other states. Because it seems to me that other states tend to be more the actual licensing enforcement piece of it, and they leave this end of things to, like, the Department of Education or something like that.
Yeah, that's curious.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see how many state licensure boards have regulatory authority over the preparation programs.
I think it's pretty small, but we should explore that and look into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then did you also hear how she said they have 22,000 licenses and 15,000?
13,500 active yeah. teachers yeah. in the state.
Well, that came up in another conversation.
Yeah. Wyoming has 24,000 active licenses and only 8,000 teachers. So it's interesting.
That's interesting, the licensing gap. That's
uh-huh. There are a lot of licenses out there, but there's not people to fill jobs, and there's not people who want.
So that's where you have to incentivize the using of the license, though, and mm-hmm. that's going to be the support, that's going to be the pay scales, all of yeah. these things. And
correct.
You have to get the political buy-in, obviously, to do that, and that's hard.
And they just did a decompression of our pay scale. So other districts and other states, you move with every year, right? You get mm-hmm. you get a different pay. However, in Hawaii, it's always negotiated. So that hasn't been negotiated because there's always a short, they don't have enough money, the budget shortfalls, and so there are a lot of teachers that were compressed. Mm. And I believe it's like in that 15, 25, they're all, even though they had a lot of years of experience, they're all being paid the same. So the decompression now, because the legislators, they had money, they had funding, they actually decompress. So actually within the next few weeks, teachers are gonna see a difference that we're in that compression. Are going to see a difference in their paycheck.
Like a big jump?
I'm hoping a big one. I guess it depends on where you're at. I didn't yeah. take a look at the pay scale, but a lot of teachers and union has been telling all the teachers as well, get ready for your paycheck to be changing. And even the department, this is well deserved for the teachers. They finally need to fix this, as well as they did differentials. And so if you have a SPED license and you're teaching with SPED students, you get additional money. Mm-hmm. The hard to fill areas get additional money. If you have the Hawaiian license, the Hawaiian immersion license, you're getting additional money. So they're doing differential, like pockets of money for those shortfall areas.
That's good.
So they're trying to think outside the box. Again, cost of living in Hawaii is, as you know, quite expensive. And come in. This is why we have the 22,000 active, and they find out cost of living, 1.1 million right now, house median. So they just, they leave.
Or they're moving out of education to something that's more lucrative.
Well, cool. This has been great. Anything else that you want to mention before we close that we haven't yet?
Not much. I mean, is there anything else you guys want to ask me about?
I mean, there's a lot, but I'm curious about a lot of things. But
yeah, no, Jethro, it's really an interesting partnership in that Jethro brings such an administrative perspective to mm-hmm. these things, and it's really fascinating for me to hear how he comes at things. I think from my perspective, you know, having had a little taste of the islands and really enjoying my time there, I'm really impressed with regions like yours, or Alaska, for instance, or even some parts of the Southwest, where technology is not really a luxury. It's a necessary function of mm-hmm. doing a lot of the work that you do. And I think that's both a good thing and obviously slightly more challenging, because it opens up the potential misuse, the cyber traps that we talk about.
And being as islands, one of the new business items that the board just passed, and we had during COVID an emergency new business item that EPPs, educator preparation providers, could view or evaluate or observe their teacher candidates virtually. And so when COVID ended, so did that new business item sunsetted. So they put in a new business item at the request of the educator preparation programs. Can we do a hybrid?
Yeah.
Because of neighbor islands. Like, we don't have to fly in anymore.
Right.
We can meet with them once or twice, but we don't have to go every time. So we can do maybe 2 observations virtually, 3 in person, but they wanted that option. And so the board saw that, that's great. So you can reach out to neighbor islands who don't have that physical college space there for the professors to fly in every time, and they can help, you know, with the teaching and the recruitment of educators, and saying that, yes, we can do that virtual component as well. So hopefully that's going to help them out a lot.
And I think one of the topics down the road, Felicia, would love to talk to you about is given the necessity of using remote instruction tools and the savvy your kids would develop, whether proportionately you might have more electronic boundary cases than other areas might, you know, where there's just more reliance on in-person teaching. And you may not know that for a couple of years, but I'll be curious to see.
And it's going to be having you come back to Hawaii and present to teacher candidates about that information, so they're well prepared to do that type of thing.
I absolutely would love to do that. I think it's such important work. And frankly, from my perspective, having done this now for a decade, you guys have been in the lead of states addressing this issue. So it's really impressive.
Yeah, and we hope to continue on. And again, getting as many stakeholders as possible to pool our resources together and hit those hot topics that we need to solve some issues within our state.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope to come back again with some updated news.
We will definitely invite you back. Consider it done.
Yep.
Do you want to save time on prep work, increase student achievement for all of your students, reliably meet Tier 1 standards? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/B to learn how IXL's research-proven teaching and learning platform can help you achieve these goals. That's IXL.com/BE.